It was Earth Day. The environment had recently become a national mania, especially among the young, and a group of conservationist leaders, headed by Senator Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin, had picked April 22 as a day of national dedication to the cause of eliminating pollution in all its forms. Were preposterously large paper stock market profits such as Ross Perot had made to be considered a form of pollution? Quite possibly. In Washington, in front of the Department of the Interior building, 1,200 young people milled around shouting, "Off the oil and stop the muck," to protest government leases to oil producers, whose operations were thought to cause pollution. There were anti-pollution rallies of 25,000 or more, watched by the FBI, it became known later, in New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia. In Bloomington, Minnesota, former Vice President Humphrey urged the United Nations to establish an environmental agency to combat pollution around the world. And at Georgetown University in Washington, Senator Birch Bayh of Indiana called for a national agency to conquer pollution as we have conquered space. Interior Secretary Walter Hickel, an authentic hero of environmentalism, since he was a convert soon to be martyred professionally for his views, was in his home state of Alaska, getting a hero's welcome. In New York City, children rode bicycles to school. Huge, lighthearted crowds gambled on an automobile-free Fifth Avenue. At 17th Street, people were offered the opportunity to breathe pure air from the nozzle of a block-long polyethylene bubble, and so on, as all the artillery of promotion and public relations was turned momentarily in an unfamiliar and uncharacteristic direction. The same day, the novelist Kurt Vonnegut, after alluding to President Nixon's statement that he did not propose to be the first American president to lose a war, commented, "He may be the first American president to lose a planet." All this resolution and high spirits fought upstream against one of the deepest moods of gloom to darken any American April since the Civil War. The first Mealy revelations were 5 months old. The dangerous and disturbing New Haven strike in support of the Black Panthers, which would spread quickly to campuses all over the Northeast, was to begin that same day, April 22. The stunningly unpopular invasion of Cambodia was 8 days off. The Kent State University killings of students by National Guardsmen, 12 days off. The gloom, compounded by signs of an approaching national economic recession, had caused a stock market panic that, though far from over, was already comparable in a remarkable number of ways to that of October 1929. The Dow Jones Industrial Average of common stocks had sunk relentlessly through almost all of 1969, then, after holding fairly firm through the first 3 months of the new year, it had gone into a sickening collapse that had carried it by April 22 to a level some 235 points below where it had been at its peak 16 months earlier. Much worse, the Dow did not begin to tell the whole story. Interest rates were at near record highs, strangling new housing construction and making most industrial expansion impractical. The dollar was in bad trouble in the international markets, with foreigners holding American currency worth many billions more than the national gold hoard. 100 or more Wall Street broker-age firms were near failure. As for the Dow, made up as it was of the old blue chips that had long since been deposed as sensitive and accurate market leaders, it was a pale, watered-down reflection of the real stock market situation. A better indication is to be found in the fact that in May 1970, a portfolio consisting of one share of every stock listed on the big board was worth just about half of what it would have been worth at the start of 1969. The high flyers that had led the market of 1967 and 1968, conglomerates, computer leasers, far-out electronics companies, franchisers, were precipitously down from their peaks. Nor were they down 25% like the Dow, but 80, 90, or 95%. This was vintage 1929 stuff, and the prospect of another Great Depression, this one induced as much by despair as by economic factors as such, was a very real one. The visible parallels to 1929 in the business and financial spheres were enough to make a man agree not merely with Santayana, who said that those who forget history are condemned to repeat it, but with Proust, whose whole great book, read one way, seems to say that man's apparent capacity to learn from experience is an illusion.